Welcome to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. Everybody is returning for at least their second time on the show. Let's start in the bottom left corner with Lucky the Pizza Dog himself, David Rosen. How are you tonight, David?
Doing well, sir.
I have no idea how we are going to react with you in the actual panel instead of giving us theories from the comments, but I think we will be able to make do. Kara, you love us 3000. It says right in the corner. It is perfectly placed. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I love the show, so I'm very happy to be here for the second time on the Hawkeye.
I was going to say second time just for Hawkeye, right? Yeah, absolutely. And from the Nerd Emporium on Instagram, Sarah, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here with you guys.
We are super excited to have you. Do not worry. We will not mention the word Spider-Man more than just now. Once you've seen Spider-Man, check out everybody within this screen talking about. David was Doc Ock and Doctor Strange. Kara was talking about top four moments because she didn't want to talk about any specific character. Mm-hmm. And Sarah definitely got shortchanged when we talked about MJ and Ned. So we're going to have to revisit all those topics. Everything got a little bit shortchanged all at the same time. We put together an episode I'm extremely proud of. So check out Spider Sunday anywhere you find your podcast at Earth's Mightiest Weirdos or on This Diz Life YouTube. Again, a show I'm very, very proud of. And I want to thank everybody, all 11 or 12 people that joined us last night. It was a lot of fun. So we will not talk anything about Spider-Man No Way Home from here on out. Did you hear that? We will not be talking about Spider-Man from here on out as we get into the world, according to Jax. Hey, Jax.
Hey, Dad.
We're not going to talk about Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think about Hawkeye?
I really liked this episode.
Yeah? What did you like about it?
I liked all the intensity of the fight between Maya and Hawkeye.
And Ronan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, and it was pretty crazy that he revealed himself to her.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that because that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
What about Yelena at the beginning? We found out that Yelena got blipped, right?
Yeah.
And that looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Yelena, what was Yelena's favorite food? Do you remember what they were eating?
Macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese. Yeah. And Kate says that I've had box macaroni and cheese. It's delicious. So is box macaroni and cheese as delicious as Kate says it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yelena puts hot sauce on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yelena was pretty funny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was great. Well, at the very end of the episode, there was a big bald guy in a white suit. What did you think of Kingpin?
Oh, that was awesome.
Were you a little bummed? You got kind of mad at me knowing it was coming, huh?
Yeah.
We kind of ruined that?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. Do you think Kingpin's a good guy or a bad guy? Yeah, he's a bad guy, right? Yeah. What do you think we're going to see? So we got one episode left. Do you think Clint is going to go back home and live on the farm? Or do you think he's going to still be a superhero?
He'll be a superhero.
Ooh, buddy. Yeah. You don't know?
Sure. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, we'll probably find out this week.
And I was also a bit bummed that Jack didn't become a good guy.
Oh, we'll talk about Jack a little bit more because I feel like Jack still probably is a good guy. And he got framed by Eleanor, Kate's mom, who's really kind of mean. So, but Jack's awesome, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack's our buddy. All right. Well, thank you, pal.
Welcome, Dad.
All right. That is the world according to Jax. He wasn't sure. He was a little more structured for Spider Sunday last night, but he likes Hawkeye, and he likes Hawkeye a lot. Kara, let's get into it. Kara, we have really no other Marvel news other than go see Spider-Man No Way Home. It's great. Kara, what did you think of the fifth episode of Hawkeye?
Loved it. Same as every other episode. I love this show. I thought it was funny. I thought, you know, it's the same. I cry, I laugh. I'm like glued to my screen the whole time. It's giving me everything that I want every week.
I've been neglecting the comments. We got to fix that. So hello to Jessica, main mud runner's here as she always is, or main mud runner, he or she, I think it's she. I honestly don't remember. But they were there at Spider Sunday last night and then bounced out. So I don't know if I hadn't gotten their chance to hear their thoughts on Spider Sunday or on Spider-Man. So I would love to hear more of that. Frankie is here. Kristen is here. That's his girlfriend. Kristen is dating Kara in the bottom corner. Sarah's here. Patrick is here. Jalen's here to see Pizza Dog. Jalen is the winner of the Tom Holland t-shirt. So Maine Munrutter was at Spidey Sunday and is encouraging everybody to go listen. So thank you so much. There. So Sarah's here popping the popcorn. Katie is here. Piano Rob, the man himself, is here for a little bit until his own show starts. Lots going on. Mark's here. So let's get back into it. David, what did you make of? Now, I don't think you've had a chance to talk Hawkeye with us yet. You've been in the comments many times. You seem pretty positive about this show as well. Where do you stand with Hawkeye, especially that fifth episode?
This was a great episode. What is frustrating is that they are doing so much. I have no idea how they're going to wrap all these different storylines up this week. But I love these characters. One of the reasons I was a little upset that they brought in the whole Clint family in Age of Ultron was I thought it meant that we would never get the Matt Fraction run of the comics in a show. So I am super stoked that this show exists and we're getting what we're getting, and they are bringing in characters from elsewhere into this show that belong in a larger universe.
So I don't know what you mean. Sarah, how about you? Fifth episode, you were on just last week as well, so you were able to get your reaction from just week to week. What did you make of this one?
It just like I said last week, it keeps getting better with every episode. I love that up until this point in the MCU, we haven't seen a lot of Clint's background. And what, you know, like David just said, what we do know about his background isn't necessarily comics accurate, like super comics accurate. So I do love that we are getting a comics Hawkeye in this series. I'm absolutely here for it, and I love it. Incorporating all the other characters, it's great.
Something I really enjoyed as we see each episode is going into our community and being able to see, holy cow, did you see this from Matt Fraction's run? Did you see this? Did you see that? Like I mean, I knew the comic run was beloved amongst the fandom community, but clearly the people making this show really, really like that Matt Fraction run as well. They thought of everything. They're incorporating so much into it. And the character of Echo, holy cow. I love that character so much, and I cannot wait to get more of Alacqua Cox in that role. I hope we see her again well before we even see the Echo show. I think that there's multiple opportunities where she could pop up, especially if we are going to be doing a lot more within Hell's Kitchen. We don't know. Yeah, we just don't know like what's coming, and man, they've got it figured out. Marvel, I mean, I'd say they kind of know what they're doing just a little bit. Let's stick there in the top right corner with Sarah. Sarah, as our resident Black Widow supporter, lover, everything about Black Widow, we start the episode by being reintroduced to who the character of Yelena Belova is in 2018, clearing up where I was confused by saying Clint said somebody's hired a Black Widow assassin. It turns out the Black Widows are simply just now assassins for hire, and Clint knew that the Red Room had been taken down. I never really considered that option, but Yelena is trying to do the work and ruining $20,000 carpets and then getting blipped in the bathroom and watching the walls change from brown to green. Sarah, what did you make of this reintroduction of Yelena Belova?
I thought it was brilliant. Of course, hearing Natasha's voice at the beginning got me in the feels immediately.
Real quick, I want to say hey to James. It's the first time we've seen James in just a little bit. So hey to James. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, howdy, hey. I loved it. I thought it was great. I liked the interrogation. I know we'll get into it, but the interrogation / girls' night was hilarious. Oh, and then Florence Pugh is just brilliant. I'm a fan. Yep.
Yelena is a comics character as well, introduced in a similar manner to how she was in the MCU, correct?
Pretty much, yeah. Like a little bit, the sibling rivalry spirit is there. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Kara, how about you? This introduction of, or this reintroduction of Yelena in this house, they assumed, like when she goes, did you just think I'm here with some old man who's holding me against my will? And she's like, yeah, kinda. Like, What did you make of this Yelena stuff?
Yeah, this whole intro was fantastic. It, like Sarah said, from hearing Nat's voice, like I was already crying before we even got to any pictures of Yelena. And then her going in the bathroom, that was the first time we've seen the blip like that, where it's just instant. And that had me in pieces. I was not expecting that. It looked awesome. So to see her come out and realize, okay, it's 5 years, like that's the first time we've been presented with the fact that it was 5 seconds, 5 years, yeah, in that way. So that was awesome.
I was in space and I got all dusty.
yeah. So that was awesome. I thought, like to see how she's still going to look for other widows to save them. I liked that, because I guess like a year had passed since Black Widow at that point, 2018. A year,
yeah, right? Yeah, it was a year and a half. I think Civil War was 16, so it had been 2 years.
Yeah, so I like that she's still going out trying to save them. I think that says a lot about who she is. And then just, I have to find Natasha was devastating. Yes.
Oh, I have to let her know that I'm okay. Yeah, that was...
That hurt.
That was brutal. That hurt. Patrick says Clint didn't know what Yelena looked like, only knew her name. In my head canon, it kind of ruins it, because I did picture Natasha going around with a wallet just with pictures inside, being able to show it. But her daddy knows that macaroni was good for her at the very, very least. David, what did you make of Yelena going to try and continuing her mission to free Black Widows and then learning that, hey, we could just be for hire here?
I thought she did a really good job of trying to do good and channel Natasha. You could tell she, even though she is still very much alive when this starts, she's very much on her mind. She's still looking up to her. The music that they opened this up with, I believe, is from the Black Widow soundtrack. And I wish I could take credit for this, but the little whistle you hear, the whatever it was.
From the Hunger Games, right?
Well, Katniss does exist in this universe. No, I believe that the whistle we heard is the whistle that she makes at Natasha's grave.
Yep.
In the end credit scene. But in terms of this was it was really weird. The first thing it was a prologue to the episode, but not in the way they normally do it, because they did this and then the fanfare and then the previously on. So they're very much trying to prime us and get us back into a Yelena headspace. It would not shock me if there are people watching this show who maybe didn't see Black Widow or only saw Black Widow maybe once or don't remember it. So I think they did a really smart thing of catching us up of who Yelena is, what she's doing, and why she is on this mission and spraying random people with, you know, a red mitt. But as both Sarah and Kara mentioned, that blip scene was incredible. And first of all, it's very much what we got about Monica in WandaVision, but from a much different point of view. I personally was watching Venom Let There Be Carnage right before this, and so I watched the end credit scene.
I'm gonna do my best Ryan Reynolds, but why? Sorry, end credit scene. I interrupted you.
I was watching the end credit scene, and with if you haven't seen it, but there's a little effect that shows what's happening there, and it was almost the same effect that Yelena experiences. So I thought at first she was, you know, multiversing or whatever. So I thought, how are they going to play this out? And then I realized what they were doing, which I thought was really smart. I feel like eventually they keep doing this blip stuff. They have to keep stuff fresh and showing what it was like, showing how disorienting, how confusing it is for someone who experienced it. They haven't really done that yet in the MCU. And so it was really smart to open up the episode like that and just show things from her perspective.
Marvel's doing several interesting things with the blip. One, the blip is getting fandom out of trying to exactly put the storyline within our date range. They clearly are no longer interested in us knowing whether it's 2022, 2024. Like, they're not that interested in that. I don't think they want to keep that kind of continuity anymore. And I think the blip is the reason for that. And I'm good with it. Like, I'm fine with it. And then with the blip, they're going to get a lot of legs out of, was this character blip? Were they not? We've only seen the return from the blip from three different character or from three different points of view. Really, we got it from Monica in WandaVision. We just got it here with Yelena, but we also got it from the band in Spider-Man Far From Home. But those are the only characters we've seen return from the blip. So I would expect we're going to have a lot of legs of figuring out going from there. I need to know, was Alexei Shostakov blip or not? Because I need to know if he was on that battlefield in Avengers Endgame or not, because that would have been, I need to see the battle from his point of view, just being very confused at a giant Ant-Man, if nothing else. But let's, we'll move on to sticking with Yelena Belova. We're going to go back to Sarah. We're going to talk about the girls' night. She could have killed Kate Bishop if she walked through right when she walked through the door, wouldn't have even let the door close. This is two actresses at the top of their game, giving us one of the most memorable scenes from any of the Disney Plus shows, maybe the MCU in general.
Yep. And shout out to Bert and Bertie directors for pulling this kind of humor out of such a tense, what could have been a super tense scene.
Mark, if you're only listening on podcast, Mark says, with my luck, I would have been sitting on the toilet during the blip. Yeah, sorry.
But Bert and Bertie are doing a fantastic job, and this scene is just so good, and Florence Pugh and Hailee Steinfeld are just, oh my gosh, the ability to make us laugh and also like hold our breath because it's super tense. And then Florence Pugh just like diffuses it all with like a laugh. And she's so talented. And this scene was so high stakes, but played so well. It was just really great. What probably like top three moments from this series.
So what are you doing here? Well, it's my first time in New York. Like, I need to know where to go. Genuinely is asking for like travel advice around New York City. And then Kate's like, I'm just so glad I didn't kill you. And she legit just like belly laughs saying, you killed me. You're very funny, Kate Bishop. Like, you're very funny.
The fact that
she constantly calls her Kate Bishop is great. When the text comes through at the end, I wish she would have just put Kate Bishop as one word. But I mean, that's beside the point. Box macaroni and cheese is delicious. Kate only has one fork. That entire gag was hilarious. But Kara, what did you make of this entire conversation? Like Sarah said, you're holding your breath and you're laughing all at the same time.
I will watch as much material between these two as they'll give me, and then I'll watch more. So if anybody else wants to make a show specifically just about Girls' Night or whatever kind of Kate and Yelena mix that we can get, I am here for it. One thing I noticed in this scene, I don't know if you guys have ever heard Rob Lowe talk about people, like actors eating in scenes. He is always talking about how he always watches actors when they're eating to see how much they eat or how they pretend to eat. Florence Pugh was legitimately eating this mac and cheese. And that's all I could think of while I was watching this, is Rob Lowe would be so happy with this. Yes, so she did great. I thought they were both so funny. I loved this whole scene.
The packaged fork. This is nut cutlery. This is not cutlery. David, it does seem like it almost seems like a Nexus event that in every single universe, we have to have Hawkeye and Black Widow as best friends. We're destined to have this, right?
I mean, yeah. If this scene doesn't show the potential of a relationship between these two, I don't know what will. For me, this scene, I'll tell you, I watched this scene and seeing how chummy Yelena was with Kate, I had instant flashbacks to the first scene in Inglourious Basterds with Hans Landa. Just the way he seems so...
That's a good call, yeah.
The way he seems so disarming and chummy, and he's friendly, and he's drinking his milk and all that. And then just like on a dime, things can turn. And that's basically what happened here. They were being really friendly. You know, Kate starts to let her guard down a little bit. And then, oh yeah, I'm here to kill Clint. And then everything goes right back up. And There's so much tension. You know that Kate's okay, I feel like. She says that she's not there to harm Kate, but Kate very much cares about Clint, and I don't know what must have been going through Kate's mind at this point. There was a point in that scene where I feel like when Kate was talking about how Natasha and Clint were friends, that she may be starting to get through to Yelena and make her realize that she may not be entirely have been told the truth about what her mission is. And because she's such a super spy, Yelena doesn't show it. But I get a sense that maybe she's starting to doubt a little bit the order that she's been given to kill
Clint. Well, because she's following Eleanor at the end, right? So she kind of listened to Kate.
She's checking things out. And so, I mean, I feel a good spy wouldn't let on to the fact that she's getting through to her, but we see it. And there's always a very brief second in that scene that she shows it, but she, whatever, I forgot what she says afterward to try to act otherwise, but you could tell she got through. And I also love the whole Kate Bishop. You just call me, say my full name to say you know who I am. Yeah, I am. It was very much what, like when Kate clocked Clint assessing threats in that second episode. So both of these girls are playing a mental game of cat and mouse.
Yeah, if she's able to get through to her, she's able to hide her surprise a lot better than Kate is when she finds out that she's Natasha's sister. I think that was, again, perfectly acted by Haley Steinfeld, because you could see exactly what Yelena meant by don't try to act like you're not surprised because you look silly doing it. Like,
yeah.
Very, very tense, very, very crazy, crazy stuff. And Haley Steinfeld is being overlooked in this scene, in my opinion, just how tense she feels and is able to just what is happening. She's on target with the hot sauce bottle. Just everything is just so good. How she's trying to she calls her a bloodthirsty vigilante, like all kinds of just stuff that she's trying to get to the point. What's interesting to me, and we talked about it for quite a while last week, of why hasn't Yelena done her research? She should know that Clint didn't kill Natasha, that Natasha, she clearly understands what happened at Vormir. So Sarah, I mean, as a big Natasha fan, I would assume you're okay with her holding a little bit of a personal vendetta against Clint, if nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense. I love Clint just because he's been there since the beginning and Natasha loved him. And, but he did a lot of things that he needs to answer for and acknowledge. And I feel like he's been doing that over the last few episodes, the last couple of episodes.
It's a little less of a secret that he was Ronin than I originally realized.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, they played it for like a little comedic moment when Yelena says the trail of blood that follows him could wrap around the world. And Kate says, well, that's Russian, and which is funny, but it also, I mean, you know, 5 years is a long time to pile up bodies. And I do think that he needs to atone.
I think it's interesting that we get a hint here that, so I feel like from Endgame, we got the sense he was just playing vigilante, going around killing gangs because, you know, the bad guys didn't get blipped. But in this one, we kind of get a little bit different of a sense that he wasn't doing that the entire time, but that he was, you know, only doing it when he was hired to do so.
So he was a mercenary himself.
You think he was, I guess I didn't get the sense that he was necessarily hired, only that he was informed by whomever that may be. We'll talk about it, but I guess, I mean, he had to make a living, I suppose. Everybody handled the blip in their own way. He says, interesting. I think we might get that answered. Patrick asked the question. He says, was it Val that hired Eleanor or vice versa? I think Eleanor reached out to Val to then have this happen. I would assume that the post-credit scene in Black Widow takes place during the events of this series before Natasha or before Yelena shows up. We'll stick with it. We'll go down to Kara talking about Kate Bishop. She returns home to a loving mother, I suppose. That scene, Vera Farmiga is so great as the villain, and we knew she was the villain all along. We didn't trust her from the very, very beginning. I still think she might have just had cover from a Chitauri invasion, and she actually killed her husband. But we'll maybe, I would expect to get that answer next week. But Kara, you don't trust Eleanor Bishop whatsoever. You never have. Where do you stand on her being a loving mother, trying to take care of her after she kind of put a hit out on her daughter?
Oh my goodness. I have been saying that she's a bad mom since the beginning. Everything that she's done and the way that she's put her boyfriend in front of her daughter from day one or episode one of this show has really gotten on my nerves. And then to try and unpack the fact that she tried to pin like Kate being in danger on Clint when it was actually her putting her in danger is, that's like a lot to unpack. The saving grace of this scene was Jack and his buffoonery. Like, God bless him. He is so, I've never worked a day in my life. Like, I love that guy.
That man must be protected at all costs. Like, the more we get from him, he is getting close to like Justin Hammer, Trevor Slattery. I can see Trevor Slattery having a beer with Jack Duquesne, and I want to see it so bad. Sarah, I brought up Vera Farmiga, and Sarah, your face just kind of lit up. You seem to like this actress because of how hateable she can be.
A lot of the time, playing of a villain gets overlooked a little bit, but it's tough. It's tough to pull off, and she is just insanely talented. When Kate tells Eleanor, I think Eleanor is like dressing her wounds, and Kate tells her that she thinks Jack is behind everything, and you see Eleanor's face. You don't see anything happen. You know, she's playing poker face, but you can tell she's, you know, trying to formulate the next.
Step. Clint actually does know about Sloan Limited. Like, she comes to that. She comes to that realization.
Oh, yes.
She's now processing, Clint and Kate know way more than I thought they did.
Yes, exactly. And she's great. I know her from the Insidious movies. I know she's in a ton of other stuff, but she's fantastic.
David, do you also agree she's great in all of the worst ways?
Yeah, I wish I didn't know some of her comics background so that I could watch this in real time and see things. But even with knowing her comics background...
The comics background of Eleanor Bishop or the comics background of who you assume she is as...
No, of Eleanor Bishop.
Okay.
There's so many little amazing subtleties to this scene. The way what she talks about with Kate about, does Clint think you're a superhero? Like, she is, do you think you're a superhero? She is trying to sow seeds of doubt in Kate's head that come off sincere because she's a mother, but there's another level there that she's onto what she's doing. And it's so brilliant the way that it's acted and written. On the same side of that, on the different other side of that conversation, you can tell it maybe is having a little bit of an effect on Kate because she says she doesn't think she's a superhero either. But I also think that the end of the episode before this, it just hit her what it means to be a superhero, that you sometimes have to go up against people like Kingpin and Black Widow assassins. And so this is all hitting Kate, and Eleanor is doing her best to really, like I said, make her think about what she's doing, but also just sow the seeds of doubt to A, protect her daughter, but also try to get her out of this situation for her own selfish, but also her motherly reasons.
Do you think there's motherly reasons there? I think those feel out the door to me. Like, for me, it feels like self-preservation and self-preservation only. You're probably correct. I would assume that even if I was an evil, evil human, I would still care for my children. But
yeah, I'm not ready to say that she's so evil that all her motherly instincts are just kind of out the window. But I definitely think there's more to it. It's more on the side of trying to dissuade her from going down this path because she knows who's involved, and it's also her plan. She doesn't want her screwing up whatever, you know, villainy plot that she's into. But also bringing up her childhood and the little bow, she's trying to, I don't know if belittle is the right word, but just remind her that she's a kid.
It seems childish.
I think belittle is a great word at that point.
Mm-hmm. What I do think she doesn't realize, though, when she tells her that, you know, we're all, what's the line? We're all on our paths wind in different ways and take us. I think she says that to try and tell her that, you know, she wanted to be a superhero when she's younger, and, you know, maybe this path had her going down a little bit superhero road first, but is going to go somewhere else. But I think Kate might end up interpreting that in the sense that she's still going to be a superhero, but she just has to take a seat for a second and think about what she's doing and reevaluate. But eventually she's going to end up back on that path to being a superhero.
I'm a big fan of how Kate found out that her mother was involved, of finding out over her phone from Yelena. Like, I'm far more interested, excuse me, rather than Kate bursting into Fist Tower and finding her mom there. I think the way that this was found out was actually a stroke of brilliance. I'm very excited to where that will lead. I cannot go any further without talking about specifically the Christmas music in this episode. We got Run DMC's, I think it's Christmas in Hollis, I believe is the name of that one. We got
the Charlie Grinch. Brown Christmas.
We got Charlie Brown. We're going to get to Charlie Brown Christmas in just a second, but we got the Grinch right after the gigantic reveal at the end of the episode, which leads into, man, one of the coolest posters I've ever seen. I think this poster is absolutely brilliant. I thought it was great. We still haven't gotten our post-credit scene. I think you can count on this one at the end, and I hope it's a buddy-buddy team-up between the new Hawkeye and the new Black Widow. But Sarah, you brought up that the Charlie Brown Christmas is played at a very specific point in the episode when Clint is down on his luck and he's going to the apartment of, if he dies, I riot grills. If you kill Clint Barton, like, okay, like Jeremy Renner's probably done the interview, but if you kill grills, I'm going to lose it.
And they are doing such a good job. And forgive me, I don't know the actor's name, but that actor is doing such a good job. Did you say it, Brian?
I will find it right now.
Okay. He is doing such a good job, and he is making us love a character that's just like a B-list character from the comics.
Clayton
English. Super important.
Clayton English.
Clayton English, you angel. It's going to hurt if anything happens to that man. But yeah, so the Charlie Brown song is, for me, it reminded me of the Matt Fraction comic run where they do a whole issue about the Winter Friends, which is essentially a Charlie Brown Christmas. It looks exactly the same. But yes, brilliant, brilliant song selections.
Patrick says, and there's going to be new suits in the episode next week. Absolutely. I mean, they're in the posters for the show. Like, it's not a big giant secret. Like, they even showed us Wanda's costume in the posters a little bit in one of the televisions, but per usual with the Disney Plus series finale or season finale, the costumes are coming. And Grills has them. Like, Clint was, you want to see them? Like, and yeah. And then he just sleeps, but Grills can't stop thinking about Clint. And he offers him the couch for Christmas, which I didn't like that because Clint's supposed to be home for Christmas. We got like 2 days to wrap it up. Kara, do you love Grills as much as Sarah and I do?
Yeah, yeah. I probably not as much as you guys do, apparently, but I do really enjoy his character.
He's a LARPing firefighting, like Kate sums it up at the end, just how amazing that character is. And he's like, oh, just stop it. He's like, oh, shucks. Like, he's
perfect. And his voice is great. He's got a great voice.
Yeah, he's perfect. Well, David, we're going to move on. Clint is down on his luck. We find out that neither of them had the watch. So somehow when she was fighting Maya, like, the watch is still in Maya's possession. David, do you have any theories around this watch? Because it cannot be the WandaVision witness. We have to find out whose it is, and I'm sure we will. But
I'm sticking with my guess that Laura is a former SHIELD agent. So I think it could be just in the way sense that like a watch is like a common retirement gift. Maybe this was some sort of retirement gift from, I don't know, Nick Fury or from SHIELD or whatever, that somehow ties the thing, somehow ties the watch to Laura. Because Clint was talking about how, I don't remember exactly what he said, but that if...
They're not far away enough.
Well, they're not far away, but also blow their cover somehow. So I get the sense that whatever it is, you know, it was found at Avengers Tower, which could be any number of things. It could have been... You know, Tony Stark tech. It could have, and it could have been Tony Stark tech. It could have been a watch that Clint kept in his locker, for you know, to remind him that he has a wife at home.
So it was found at Avengers compound.
I'm sorry, compound.
No, you're good. But that does change a few. If it were Avengers Tower, that would change a few things for him. But it was Avengers compound, which means Ronan was literally carrying it as a keepsake, if nothing else.
Yeah. So I mean, we all got before we knew a lot. It was not. Uncommon to say that this could be, you know, Tony Stark's watch from Civil War, where it turns into a gauntlet. But also, we're starting to get more and more clues that it's somehow tied to Laura. So this could just be a watch that he kept in his locker, again, to remind him that he has a family at home and, you know, some sort of a keepsake or memento to keep him close to his family. So I forget all the lines that were said, but I'm getting more and more of a sense that this watch is tied to Laura, and they probably went through a lot to make sure that Laura was safe getting out of SHIELD and, you know, trying to start a family. They moved her away, and there's probably so much effort, and now this watch could screw it all up. So I still think it's going to be tied to Laura somehow. Maybe there's an inscription inside, you know, from Clint, from Laura to Clint, or unless Laura has another name. I don't want to go down that road because I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory, but it's somehow connected to Laura.
Bobby Morse. So I'm going to bring this up from Mark. Remind me to get back to this before we wrap tonight, guys. He says, am I the only one who's worried? They have a lot of story to wrap. I have a lot of thoughts on that. Sarah looks like she agrees. I don't agree whatsoever. And I can explain my thought process on that. Why Frankie says, I love all the characters are both main and not so main all at the same time. There's a lot happening in this show. That is absolutely correct. And I think they're doing a brilliant job with these characters. The name of the director from the first two episodes, whose name escapes me at the moment, is going to be directing the finale. Reese Thomas is the director there. Burt and Birdie did episodes 3, 4, and 5. Reese Thomas did 1, 2, and 6. So we're getting back to the feel of that we had in the first two episodes with Reese Thomas looking through the lens. But I'm very interested, and we have put her off long enough. She needs her due, and we're going to start there with Kara. And the brilliance of everything that is Echo and Maya Lopez, of how she is supposed to be alone. And we got the tracksuit mafia back, and they get an arrow shot through the window of the Trust a Bro moving company. And those guys just make me laugh talking about Run DMC and everything. Does anyone else think that Brian Darcy James will show up? Kate's dad? I don't. I think he's dead. And I think Eleanor is the reason why, especially if you bring him back. He's also working for Kingpin. Like that would be too much for me. But Kara, Maya Lopez, she can't hear Clint taking everybody down. Even as stealth as he was, she can't hear the bat hit the ground. She can't hear any gunfire. Then she realizes, oh crap, I am completely all alone. And Kazi says he snuck up on me. Like I don't know what to do. But this fight scene between Maya Lopez and Ronan was amazing, Kara.
Yes. Okay. Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge the bro that shot himself in the foot, because that had me in pieces. Second of all, Maya held her own against Ronan, and I was fascinated by that, because the little that we've seen of Ronan in action, there's all of these like gangsters, mafia, whoever, that we saw him fighting in Endgame that had no chance. But this girl is just holding her own. This girl we've never seen before is holding her own against Ronan and the Trust a Bro. And I was really fascinated by that. And that also made me really excited to see what happens in the future, because if this is the little that we've seen of her to start, I can only imagine where she's going.
I thought he actually like cut off her amputated leg with his sword, but I don't think that actually happens, because she gets on a motorcycle. She has two legs again. Mm-hmm. So, but I thought that that's what happened. But Clint, the very little sign language he knows is very, very powerful. The way it comes, I want you to see mm-hmm. my face. You and I are the same. Like mm-hmm. whatever
my family.
Whatever point he wanted to get across, he clearly knew what he wanted to say. And he's showing sympathy, which makes me believe he knew of her existence and timed his attack without her being there. I think that that's very, very possible. He clearly seems to know more about this character than he's letting on. Or I'm just too sappy, but I love her. I love her so much. Sarah, where do you stand with Maya Lopez after she's clearly doubting Kazi? And Kazi, Sarah, Frothy, go.
He's great. He was in Les Mis, the film adaptation of Les Mis. Broadway. And he's a theater guy from Ireland. He's amazing. Anyway, that scene with Alacwa Cox and Frothy, where she confronts him about where he was that night, is just so good and so nuanced. But I love Alacwa Cox. Quick shout out to her. She had no acting experience prior to her audition for this show, mm-hmm. which is amazing to me.
I think Kara, you said she said she didn't see her representation, so she decided to be it. I think is her
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Is she in the comics, that character?
Is she what?
Is Echo in the comics an amputee?
Deaf, but I don't know about amputee. That's a good question.
Yeah. So Frothy, I think the way you summed it up, Sarah, the way I read it was, do you understand how hard it is to act like you're acting? You don't know anything. I think that's how you put it. He's so good in this scene.
Yep.
I love it. I
love it. And incorporating the ASL also.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very curious to me when they decide to put up the subtitles and when they don't, because if you still don't have your volume up enough, sometimes they don't put up his subtitles because he's saying what he's signing. But he's so good. She's so good. David, what do you make I assume, David, do you agree with me that he was Ronan's informant that night?
That's definitely what they're pointing toward, or what they want us to think. So at least for now, I have no reason to doubt that. Mm-hmm. This scene was very Batman Begins for me. This whole like, you know, stealthy ninja thing. It also reminded me of, there was a scene in, I forgot what season it was, but one of the seasons of Daredevil, there's a scene that takes place in a garage where like men are just going down and you don't see who's doing it. It's almost from the bad guy's point of view. So this very much reminded me of that.
But I think it's season one, episode 7, I want to say.
I think it was season one, but very Daredevil-y. Anyway, what I noticed about Clint is a couple things. First of all, when he takes on this Ronin persona, his body changes, his movements change. The way that he moves that sword is very like, I don't know, ninja-like, but also very intentional, very, there's a lot of emotion in the way he moves. He doesn't really move that way as Hawkeye. So I thought that it was interesting that it's not just him putting on a costume, it's him essentially assuming a different character, a different persona. And also, he is continuing this through line of not wanting to kill anyone. When he says to, we kind of skipped over this, but when he says, when he's talking to Natasha at that Avengers memorial in New York City, and he says, "I'm sorry for what I'm about to do. I thought he was going to try to kill Maya. I know he wasn't going to, but when we get there, and he says, 'I don't want to kill you,' anyone they start fighting doesn't go for any death blow. He is very much trying to do almost the same thing that Yelena's trying to do with Kate, and sow seeds of doubt." with the people that he's working with. So it's very, he's very much playing the mental angle. He's very much trying to get inside these people's heads and use almost any method that he can employ to fix this situation without killing anyone. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that he's continuing with this no killing, I think it's part of the promise that he made to Natasha at some point that he wasn't going to kill anymore. But I do feel like he is still burdened or not haunted, but burdened by a promise he made to Natasha to not be this person anymore that we saw he could be in Avengers.
Earn what you gave me.
Yes.
Yeah. So David's right. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that scene. One, we're looking at Grand Central Station. Pan up just so I can see the tower. Like, whose name is on that tower right now? just pan up the camera just a little bit.
Baxter.
That was powerful. Well, who did you say it was?
I think it's Baxter.
I think it could be.
I'm not allowed to bring up
Kang Enterprises. Kang Enterprises would be a whole lot of fun.
That's a good one.
Or the Baxter Building, which I'm also completely fine with. But Sarah, how much of a mess were you when Clint was talking to Natasha without his hearing aid, cutting out all the noise of what New York City is? I thought this was when Yelena was going to show up. Like, I thought we might get a confrontation at that point, and I'm glad we didn't, because I think that really hammered the point home. Sarah, how much of a mess were you?
I think for me and for a lot of Natasha fans specifically, this was a good scene, almost comparable to Clint and Kate talking while they were doing the snap and having daiquiris. Yeah. I just, you know, for her sacrifice to mean something, I want him to understand, or I want to hear that he understands what it means. And it sounds like he's processing it. I was maybe leaking out of every orifice in my face during this scene. It's good. And Jeremy Renner is just, he delivers every time. He's fantastic too.
Kara, I do want to start with you on Kingpin, but I do not want to remove the opportunity from you to talk about the place where the Avengers first assemble.
Yeah, I mean, that's emotional on a lot of levels. I think one of the big things in this show is cost and what our choices and our behaviors cost physically, mentally, emotionally, in our relationships and all of that. And in every scene almost in this entire series, we've seen the cost, whether it's, you know, the bruises and the cuts and the ice packs, or just the mental and the emotional cost of everything that's happening. So to see, and I think in a way that we haven't seen it before in the MCU, like, we've seen that there's been consequences and costs of things, but we haven't seen it on this level. And mm-hmm. to bring it down to that very intimate level is very emotional on a lot of levels. But then also to just have that in that particular scene where the Avengers were in that like 360 circle, that's when I fell in love with Marvel. That's when I became, that was my entrance into nerddom. So that was a very emotional moment.
If you're in nerddom, check out the Nerd Emporium. We'll get into that last reveal, but the one thing I do want to say, Linda Cardellini has made the absolute most of her short time on screen in this show. Clint and Laura are absolute, how do the kids put it, relationship goals, I think is what they say. The fact that she knows everything about him, that he's not keeping any secrets from her, is a big, big deal to me. Yeah. David, we're going to get into it. Eleanor Bishop is the one that hired the Black Widow assassin. We then get a video. I assume we're going to see what is in this video at the start of the next episode. Eleanor Bishop, I think you can see Yelena pan the building to see how tall the building really is. I think she scales the building and is taking this video because Wilson Fisk is not dumb enough to be on the first floor of this building. So I think Yelena scales this building to get this video. What's in the video? I don't know. I just love how just overall how 2021 it is that we're getting our reveal of this massive character in a grainy cell phone video. Like, it's just brilliant to me. But David, Wilson Fisk, are you happy to finally see the reveal of Kingpin, and what do you expect next week?
I expect blood, a lot of blood. If you saw the first episode of Daredevil, Netflix, you know what that means. I think I brought this up before we went live, but apparently next week's episode has a warning for extreme violence and language. So we are getting Kingpin. This is not, this is not going to be a Disney Plus version of Kingpin. It sounds like we are getting what we were promised, what we wanted when people were calling for Vincent D'Onofrio to come back and reprise this role. I don't know if it'll be the exact same character and continuity that we got from the Netflix show, but I don't care. As long as it's the same, the same overall characterization, I will be happy. You know, this it was something that like, oh, we knew what episode was that? The third one, I think. When we first saw his hand on Maya's cheek, and we were like,
"Is this that hand?" Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we knew it was coming. We were just waiting for it, and now we're finally getting it. I remember during the Netflix show, I remember thinking how amazing would it be if we ever got Kingpin in the MCU. We have him now. Going beyond this show, just my hopes for him. I hope we one day get a Spider-Man Kingpin confrontation because that would be really cool. But for now, we're in this show. Clint is scared of him. That really interests me. He knows who this guy is. So I don't know if there's any one thing I'm looking for. Just give me Kingpin. I'll take it. We'll take whatever they give me. I know it's going to be good.
Patrick says, I thought it was strange that Vincent D'Onofrio got credited from just that photo instead of leaving it a mystery until next week, whether he'd been recast or not. It was clearly that character. I don't think there was any mystery whatsoever. They didn't want it to be a mystery. They wanted it to be the reveal that it was.
Yeah.
So that was the reveal.
The reveal that it was. And by doing it with this silhouette at the end of the credits, just made a ton of sense. Again, the Vincent D'Onofrio stuff was out there. I apologize. I did get a message saying you kind of ruined the surprise for us here at Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, just because we kind of knew it was coming. We read the tea leaves a little bit. Nobody was actually that upset, but they just said, hey, like I knew it. Like, so thank you, but no thank you. Like all at the same time. So Frankie says he didn't know the warning or language before the next episode. Jalen says the same thing. We don't know that for sure, but David did hear that, and I would trust that it's probably likely with the character that Kingpin.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would just say Kingpin, if they even pull half of what they did from Daredevil, it's going to require something like that. And at the same time, it's what we want from what Hell's Kitchen is supposed to be. Like, it's supposed to be brutal. They're supposed to have been building out the big guy throughout this series. We need the big guy to kind of live up to what he's supposed to. Go ahead, David.
I'm checking to see. I'm pretty sure there was a tweet for next week's episode that said to expect.
Okay.
That there was going to be elevated violence.
In said tweet, they also talked, they specifically called it a season finale. They did not call it a finale or a season finale or a series finale. With WandaVision, they only said finale until the name of the episode dropped, which was the series finale. So I have thoughts on what season two is going to be. But first, before we get to season two and how they're going to wrap up season one, Sarah, Wilson Fisk is officially in the MCU. And it was a brilliant reveal, in my opinion.
I thought it was great. I think, I mean, we have him, and now we officially have Matt Murdock. I am so excited to see more of Hell's Kitchen. I think Vincent D'Onofrio is vastly underrated as an actor, and so I'm super pumped that he's gotten this role and that we get him in the MCU. I have some hopes moving forward for him and how he fits into the Hawkeye world, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the extreme violence and language, I'm hoping that Grills stays safe.
Yeah. I do not expect Daredevil level. Like, when we're talking a warning, like it still is Disney Plus. I don't think you should expect an F word. I don't think you should expect extreme gore. but it's gonna be violent. But, like, I know that's not what you were saying. I just wanted to put that out there.
And we have to know why Clint is afraid of him.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I don't think we're gonna lose Clint, but
and Laura's afraid of him too. Like he said, could involve the big guy. She goes, "Oh, geez, really? Yep. Like, oh yeah. Crap."
If we lose someone we care about, and that someone is, I don't want to speak it.
You can join me and Mark with our lighter fluid and our matches.
Kara,
burn the whole thing down.
Kara, as the only thing, if Jalen says, if anything happens to Pizza Dog, I will riot. Pizza Dog is going to be fine. Like,
we got a whole team, guys.
Alex Fuller's in the preview, like, he's got a superpower for not dying. So, Kara, as I believe your only introduction to the character of Kingpin being that giant, giant man with no neck into the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Are you excited for this character? What are your expectations for this character, knowing absolutely nothing about him?
This is my entire Marvel life. I don't know anything about anyone, but I love to ride other people's hype. Okay. When Kang was coming up, I did not know one thing about Kang. Everybody was hyped. I was hyped. It was a whole thing. Same deal here. I love riding your guys' hype, and I will continue to ride that all the way through. I feel very attached to this character I've never seen before, and I'm very excited for Wednesday.
Did you watch Daredevil on Netflix, Kara?
I did not, no.
I recommended she did not either. It's not a show Kara would enjoy. Yeah, you are going to absolutely despise this character, Kara. Like, you're going to love it, and you're going to hate him more than anything. David, let's start with you. Mark says, and Kenzie also said, there's a lot to wrap up in season one. What do you think we're going to do to, we assume is season one, not just the series finale. David, where do you think we're going? What are your expectations headed into the finale this week?
Oh God, there's so much. I feel like we need a separation of Kate from her mother, and fully join up with Clint. Clint needs to call her his partner by the end of this. So that needs to happen.
It's the jet ski of the show.
Right. We need Clint inviting Yelena, and I'm also going to add Kate to come over for Christmas dinner. Because I feel like at the end of this, Kate is not going to have a mom, literally or figuratively. That's not to say that Eleanor is going to die, but I feel like after this, she just can't go back to being her daughter. Yeah. So something has to be resolved there. We need to find out about the watch. We need to see Maya's turn start to turn. From where she was to potentially being an enemy of Kingpin at this point, which I feel like is going to be very emotional. How much do you want me to do? Because I don't want to try to name everything. I want to leave some for Sarah and Brian.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine. if you're good, we'll go on to Sarah. But is there anything else massive you want to make sure we cover?
I'm forgetting something. As I was talking, there was something and then it flew away.
We'll come back to you. Dwayne asks, do we know how long the finale is? We do not. We never find out these lengths ahead of time, and that's by design. I
guess around 50 minutes.
That'd be my guess. Most of the finales seem to be around that 50-minute.
Yeah, you need a little time frame. You need that time.
But. Sarah, expectations for the finale. What do you think? Where do you think we're headed? You said you agree that it feels like there's too much to wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like they're setting up at least, I know they're setting up Echo, but probably 1, 2, 3 shows to spin off from this series. Because there's so much. If I could have my wildest dreams come true, I would have suited up Daredevil at the end, like just kind of like a real quick cameo. As they're, you know, I don't know, assembling in Hell's Kitchen, but I think, yeah, David hit all of them. I'm most excited to see how they set up Maya's turn. Very excited about that.
I did want to add also what I was thinking. They need to resolve Yelena and Clint. That's one of the big
ones. Also that.
Yeah. Kara, do you have any expectations? Is it too much to wrap up in one episode?
I don't think so. I think that Marvel has done a lot with in these shows before, in 6 episodes or 8 episodes or whatever we've gotten. And I think that I trust them to do what they need to do, because I also, knowing that this isn't going to be a series finale, I feel like they
don't know that.
I just assume. Yeah. And in that case, they don't need to wrap everything up, because Echo is going to go on to wrap up more of her stuff in her show. Yelena's going to go on to wrap up more of her stuff and other stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a lot of her next week, just because we kind of already saw her turn a little bit at the end of this episode 5. All I want is for Clint to get home for Christmas and to live. That's all I ask. And Grills and Pizza Dog and all the people that we love and care about. I just, please, it's Christmas.
I it is a lot to wrap up, except for they don't need to wrap up anything. We don't know where, like, we don't need to wrap up Kingpin. He's not a one series villain. Like, exactly. He is going to be back. We're going to find out his involvement in this story, and then we are going to know him for the future. Same thing with Echo. I think we're going to get a confrontation with Kazi. She's going to get it fully confirmed to her that Kazi's the reason that her father was murdered, and that Kingpin was also at the center of it, which is then going to complete her turn. I think this is the end of Clint Barton, that he's going to go back to live on the farm with his family. I do not think they will have the guts to kill Clint at Christmas, especially with the sacrifice that Natasha made for him to live and him to earn what she gave him, in his own words. I would love to see a Christmas dinner with the three of them, with Kate's U-Haul out front, and we end the season by Kate and Lucky packing up and moving to Los Angeles for season 2 as the title character of Hawkeye for season 2, focused solely on the character of Haley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop. That's my expectation, that I think Eleanor Bishop will be removed from the picture completely. I do think that she will die. That is my expectation. I hope Jack Duquesne just gets to live out the rest of his days in just posh manner, as he is known to do. I love that man, that he can continue to collect his swords, and that Kate can send him a few nice ones. But I do think we're headed to season 2 out in Los Angeles, setting up some sort of West Coast Avengers. All I need is Yelena and Kate to share the screen as much as possible from here on out.
Do you think her Aunt Moira has another apartment out on the West Coast, or a house?
It would make sense. Is it Los Angeles or San Francisco, Sarah?
I think it's
Los Angeles.
It is.
Okay. But Pizza Dog, I think, is making the trip with her. Mark says, all I want for Christmas is for Clint to be home with his family. Programming notes, several programming notes right here before we get out of here. Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, special time for the Hawkeye finale next Monday, 7:30, to give us ourselves a 2-hour window. Grills painting in the back, says Anthony. We are going to be talking all Hawkeye series finale next week. I can't believe it's already over. And then another programming for this Diz Life note, Babu's Frickin' Podcast will be returning to a live stream format Sunday nights during the entire Book of Boba Fett run. So the first Sunday in 2022 is January 2nd. We will be on at 8 p.m. Eastern talking about the Book of Boba Fett. We will be on every Sunday night throughout the run of the Book of Boba Fett until we get into more Star Wars content once that is over. But Sarah, at the Nerd Emporium, anything you need us to hear before we get out of here?
No, I'm happy to have been here. Thanks for having me.
Kara, we will not talk to you whatsoever if Clint does not make it out alive, but I do expect
nobody to talk to you.
I expect to talk to you Wednesday morning, knowing that Clint is alive and well, celebrating Christmas with his family.
We all hope.
David of the Modern Gods Podcast. David, anything you need to put out there before we get out of here?
This series was too damn short.
Fair enough.
I'm gonna say.
I agree with that. Let's see what the finale gives us. Maybe it's 2.5 hours. You just never know. You do know it's not that long.
I mean, there could be a secret. There could be a secret seventh episode that they're going to release next week and not tell us about.
Please don't do that, especially with the Book of Boba Fett. I wouldn't count on it. Thank you so much for everybody, Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, for the children.